Welcome back to the MaxMove podcast. This is the second half of our podcast this week. On this episode, we have Nicole from Mildly Bitter's Musings, Mike Liu, who is a playwright and co-director of the Ma Yi Writers Lab, and me, Lindsay Behrens, the founder of MaxMove. The topic of this podcast was inspired by Mike, who started the Look Harder hashtag on Twitter last year to draw attention to the fact that the best of theater lists for 2013 by major New York publications did not include any playwrights of color. We're endeavoring ourselves to look harder for more diverse theater, and we hope this podcast will help you do the same. Let's get back to the discussion. We pick up right where we left off. Another piece that I'm very much looking forward to is called I Call My Brother by Yannis Hassan-Kamiri. It's being produced at the Play Company. And he had a play at the Play Company in 2011 called Invasion. Did either of you see that?
Yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah, it's like this crazy play where at the beginning there's a coup de théâtre. That's a term I learned today, I'll be honest. I don't want to go into too much detail because it's kind of a spoiler, but there's this crazy thing that happens at the beginning of this play that is totally startling. And at least for me, it wasn't spoiled for me, so I was completely shocked by it. I don't know what your experience was there.
Yeah, there's kind of like something that takes you out of the fourth wall, and I had friends in the production, and I was still kind of shocked by it, so I'm really curious what he's going to do now.
Yeah, no. So the thing about that startling thing at the beginning of that play is that if I had known that was going to happen, I probably wouldn't have gone
to see it
because I'm so uncomfortable with breakage of the first fourth wall. But actually, I was reading a little more about this play that he's doing, and it sounds like there's not a similar incident. So it's more of like a straightforward narrative. But the story is, it's about, oh, I should give some background because this is actually, the playwright's a very interesting person. He is Swedish. His father is Tunisian. His mother is Swedish. He was raised in Sweden. And as you know, they're having a lot of problems there with xenophobia, anti-immigration, and racism. And he has been extremely involved in those issues and has published some op-eds type pieces that have gotten a lot of attention because they've had a lot of problems with racial profiling over there. He himself has been a victim of that. And so there's a lot of interesting things if you just look at not just his plays, but his novels and just editorial pieces that he's published that are very interesting. And so this play is similarly based on an incident. It takes place, I think, like about a week after a car bombing in Stockholm, it's based on like real events. So there was this car bombing, and then there was a lot of very unfortunate incidents with racial profiling in the city. And so this is about a 24-hour period where we follow a character in the aftermath of this incident. And there's not a lot of information out in the world about like what exactly this is about, but that's sort of generically the frame. And the Play Company produced the first piece. They're producing this piece also. They do a lot of work with international playwrights and actually often commission translations of international plays, and this is sort of in the same program. So I think it'll be fascinating, and it's definitely one of the things I'm most looking forward to.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times when you see plays that are sort of about racial dynamics, the dialogue can get calcified when it's just sort of like the same group of people, you know? Like, I think a lot of times, for instance, that plays about race in America tend to be like this really like black-white polemic, and then... So as somebody who's Asian, I'm like, well, how do we fit into that? Or like, how do Latinos fit into that? And so I think what was really cool about Invasion was that it was about terrorism and about like sort of this Islamophobia. But it was coming from a playwright from Europe who had like a different perspective than we kind of have about like terrorism here.
Yeah, and I think this is in exactly the same vein that Invasion was in, just from a little bit different style.
Yeah, and I think we brought up that kind of issue with Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner by Roy Williams, which is at the Atlantic Theater right now, which I know we've already talked about.
No, but we didn't talk about it.
Oh,
I
we
cut
didn't.
Because I was so inarticulate.
Take two.
We had just seen it, and I couldn't formulate sentences.
That's really funny. I forgot. Sorry.
No. So let's talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so what's the about point? Have you seen it? I haven't yet.
It's really good.
So it, and so Roy Williams is writing, updating the Alan Sillitoe short story, "The Loneliness of Long Distance Runner," set in the UK today, sort of in the post riots era, with a black leading character. So it's a mixed race cast. Or the original, you know, were white kids from I think the North, if I'm remembering vaguely. I could be wrong. And so I think one of the things that really struck me was the maybe there just was that cultural distance that allowed the conversation to not just be on the same traditional lines that you see in most sort of American stories. And maybe it is because, you know, the crime and the violence isn't gun-based too. And that was something I sort of speculated about. And I don't know, but it was, I don't know. I think the idea that this character was allowed to, you know, the questions of class in the UK, playing into race, layered that in a way that just, I don't know, just shifted the focus from, you know, if an American playwright had written the same story or tried to update it to American characters, I feel like there would have been something, you know, I don't know. I just felt like there was just something different to talk about. Okay, now I'm inarticulate about it, but.
No, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, the story is that this individual gets caught doing theft.
Sort of a petty theft.
Yeah. I am a warrior. Oh, there's a crime thing that happens. I don't know. Conviction, is that the word? Okay, so he gets put in like an equivalent of a juvenile detention facility, and he is also a passion. He's passionate about running, and he continues that passion even once he's in the juvenile detention facility. But obviously, there's a lot of restrictions on his ability to do that, and a authority figure there notices this and encourages him to continue doing it, and it invites him to participate in a competition against another school of mostly wealthy kids. And the main character, Colin, has this conflict about whether that he's actually, why is he agreeing to do this? And does the school have his best interests at heart? And is he like forsaking some deeper belief by participating in the sort of authorities regime to, you know, quote unquote, reform him, that kind of dilemma.
Right. And, you know, is he a pawn in these other people's plans? Is he being used as a tool, as a symbol? You know, who is he? Who does he stand for? Who is it? Because I felt like it just kept coming back to this idea of these young unemployed men in the cities who, you know, everybody assumed, oh, well, if you're a young man of color, then you must have been involved in the riots. And so this idea that he's just not even seen as who he is, there are all of these assumptions being made about him. And as much as he becomes the sort of, you know, teacher's pet to this authority figure at the detention center by being given these privileges to go running, which is what he loves and what he enjoys, the way in which the play is staged is all the time he goes out running, we hear him, his internal monologue, and then also sort of flashback to like what life he sort of led up to this point. And that struggle, and it's not a clear answer. And there's not a you know, nice pat like, oh, he's going to save the world, or, oh, he is this, he is that. It's, you know, he is still struggling to even come up with his own identity in a society. And there's a lot of, you know, the voice of David Cameron speaking about the riots and all of this, you know, sort of contemporary race tension in the UK, coming out, and him just being like, who am I, you know, as a child who his father had passed away, and, you know, sort of a mother who didn't really pay any attention to him, you know, what is his place in the world? And I don't think the play actually, you know, I think it works very hard to not define those things, and I feel like some of the reviews were frustrated by that, but I was kind of intrigued by the fact that it just felt more open to this young man as a young man, and not as a representation of something else.
Yeah. I know you didn't think that was your turn, but that was your turn.
No, that's fine.
Oh, that means I have to have another
Mike.
Turn. Yeah, sure. You know, something that I'm really excited to see is Appropriate by Brendan Jacob Jenkins. It's going on at the Signature. Were you going to say that too?
No, I wanted to talk about this, but I didn't feel like I would have been in the position of, I've heard this is really cool. I don't know anything about it, so I'm very glad that you're speaking about it.
Yeah. Well, so for one thing, it's being directed by Liesl Tommy, and she's I feel like she's really underrepresented in New York, and she's just such a smart director. And then Brandon is a classmate from Juilliard, and he had been working on this play in class, and then it got picked up to be done at Humana and at Victory Gardens and Woolly Mammoth. So this is like one of those interesting and rare occasions where New York is kind of getting it after it's already had this really great regional run, which I think should happen more and more, because it seems like we're very spoiled in sort of having things that start here and then go out. But this play is, it's just like, what is going to happen? It's like a Southern white family has a dead patriarch, and they find that there's this really sort of nasty and unexpected sort of racially tinged past to this patriarch, and kind of like as they're trying to settle his estate. And I think that's probably enough sort of clue in about it, but you know, because it sort of has these great surprises to it. Brandon writes these really outrageous plays that sort of explode on themselves, and I'm just kind of so excited. I'm almost giddy to sort of see how audiences take it, and kind of how much it's shaped up since the first draft that we read in class.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds great. I don't have anything to add other than it sounds great. Do you have anything to add?
It's at the Signature from February and March.
Yeah. Yeah, and he has a residency there, and I think that's cool too, because Signature started out and sort of had these seasons that were dedicated entirely to master playwrights, and now they've branched out a little bit and have sort of mini residencies for up-and-coming writers. But when you're a playwright and the way that your plays kind of go out into the world, like this is really unusual to have a theater that dedicates, we're going to produce you a couple of times over the next few years, because it can feel very mercantile that you sort of have this hit that goes to a couple of places, but then your next play maybe doesn't have a home.
A deeper investment in the writer themselves. And
right, as opposed to an individual play is kind of like this commodity or something.
Right, right. Cool. And if you buy early, the Signature tickets are $25. So,
which I think is also pretty radical. Fantastic. That that if you kind of remove some of the financial barriers to going to theater, because I think that part of why not a lot of young people go to see theater is financial, and part of it is also kind of like, is this about me, or like sort of does it address my world? But you're not going to know that if you don't get into the door, because tickets are so expensive. And yeah.
Well, along those lines, Dominique Morisseau's having a bare bones production of the third play in her Detroit cycle at LARC in February. And the bare bones productions are more than a reading, less than a full stage production. And if you don't know about LARC, they're this play development center, and Mike, you should probably talk to this, not me, but they're amazing.
Yeah, the LARC, there's sort of two major play development centers in New York. One is New Dramatists and one is the LARC. And since writers can't really hatch plays full grown from their brains, like, and have them go immediately to production, like, these are two places that have really stepped up for that interim period between first draft and like ready for production. And the LARC's philosophy is a really sort of wide tent, where they have like a playwrights week where anybody can submit, and they pick a few plays to have a workshop. But then they have these like really sort of deep investments in some playwrights. And for Dominique, she had been on a pony fellowship, which is a year of housing. They just like give you an apartment for a year. and so when you don't have to think about New York rent, you can write a lot more. And so Bare Bones Productions are they're rehearsed, but they don't have very many props. And American Hwang Up, which was Lloyd's play that I'd mentioned earlier, had started there. So it's really exciting, actually, because it's like, you know, you're going to something that doesn't have plush seats and that doesn't have like this big, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars set, but it's like you see that raw play in there, and it'll be great to see sort of how she caps this off.
Yeah, so she has three plays that are about her hometown, Detroit. The first, Detroit 67, was developed through the Public Theater's Emerging Writers Group. The second play is called Paradise Blue, and I don't think it's had performance here in New York. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think she had Detroit 67 and Sunset Baby last year.
Yeah, so Sunset Baby, which is not part of the cycle, but is another play by her that was at Labyrinth, which I saw and was excellent. I don't know if you missed it. I wanted to see it.
But
it was great, very intense, but wonderful. And then this third play called Skeleton Crew is having this bare bones production at Lark. And their plays and their readings are either free or very inexpensive. And that's true for this play as well. It's technically free, although there's a $15 suggested donation. And RSVPs are open for it. And this is a very small venue. And this will definitely sell out very quickly. So if anyone's interested in seeing it, they should RSVP promptly.
I'm going to do that right now.
Yes, I've already done it. I'm going, for stocking purposes, I'll be there on Sunday. Nicole?
Okay, I'm going to bring up The Who and the What by Ayad Akhtar, which is going to be at LCT3 from May to June. I guess it's out in La Jolla before that, and then we'll come to New York. And Ayad Akhtar has written plays and novels and an actor and screenplays, and his piece, Disgraced, won the Pulitzer last year and was also at LCT3, and I didn't see it. Shoot myself. But I did see it eventually. I didn't see it in New York. I saw it in London because that's who I am on this podcast.
That makes so much sense.
I go to London to see American plays, basically. I like to see it with a non-native audience, you know, to feel
You missed Asif Manvi in it, who...
I know.
Probably amazing.
It sold out really quickly here. Okay. LCT3 always sells out really quickly. It's a very small space. It's a great space.
And they too have kind of a ticket subsidy, so it makes it accessible as well.
Absolutely.
It's accessible if you act quickly.
Those old people, they rush out and they get those cheap tickets. And the young people.
Surprisingly spry when it comes to getting theater tickets.
It's true. I mean. And I know that they're really, LCT3 is really trying to develop a younger audience, so we appreciate that. But I'm really curious about this one. I mean, Disgraced was fantastic. I really enjoyed the kind of blistering intensity of that play, also as a lawyer. the sort of racial issues that come up in white shoe New York law firms and... the assumptions that all the characters in that play are making about each other that then sort of get upended. And the new play, The Who and the What, is about a Muslim family. The daughter has written a book about women in Islam, and it threatens to tear her family apart. And so the little blurb is sort of the chasm between the traditions and our contemporary lives.
Yeah, it's sure to be interesting. Cool. Mike?
You know, I think that I would wrap up like sort of my list by calling out a couple of things that are outside of New York, just because I might actually plan trips around seeing people's plays. So I have four different writers that I wanted to talk about, but I won't go into super lot of detail. There's Pinkolandia by Andrea Tome that's going to Two River in Jersey February and March, and then in Chicago in May. That was one of my favorite productions from last year. Premiered at Intar, and it's about a Chilean family that has immigrated to the U.S. and it's from the kids' perspectives, and it's them kind of wrestling with this bicultural past and sort of like measuring their parents' generation's actions. And so I think it's great that it's going to go to a couple of other theaters. And so if you happen to be in Jersey or in Chicago. And then also in Chicago, Tracy Scott Wilson's Buzzer at The Goodman. I have no idea what it's about, but she had an amazing play called The Good Negro at The Public a couple of years ago, and I've been really excited to sort of see more from her. We have a Mayi Labby named Kimberly that she's on the current Pony Fellowship at the Lark, and is having, she's never had a production in New York, but she's going to have one at Humana called Brownsville Song B-Side for Trey, and one at the Taper called Different Words for the Same Thing. Again, I don't know anything about them, but she's an amazing person, and the things that she's like, she hasn't been bringing into Lab like the things that she has already sort of locked. Like, so I know that her next plays are awesome as well. And then the last was a couple of works by Madhuri Shekhar called In Love and Warcraft at the Alliance in Atlanta and A Nice Indian Boy at East West Players in LA.
Cool. Nicole, you don't know this, but I'm going to try to convince you to go to Humana with me. It's just a weekend.
You should really go.
And it's cheap. It's in Kentucky.
And it also, it kind of feels like New York to go to Humana because it's like, you know, you go for these weekends and there's sort of a, all these theater makers from New York are out there checking out the plays and sort of,
You haven't talked to locals at all.
But you should
I've
talk to them.
I've actually been to Kentucky before.
That was a joke.
And I have traveled for theater. I've gone to Kansas City. I've gone to Chicago. I've gone
no
to San Diego.
No one doubts that you travel for theater, Nicole. That is not in, that's not in dispute.
And I do think it's important to remember that there are plays that start in other places. And, you know, if you are following playwrights or actors and whatnot.
Let's take the podcast on the road.
We're going to have a Kentucky broadcast.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right, cool. Those sound great. Okay, so I want to wrap up by just mentioning two playwrights who actually don't have upcoming plays announced right now, but I would expect that we would hear from them soon in the future. One is Mary Catherine Nagel, and she actually has a play going on right now, and today's the last day. It's called Mislead, and it's at 59E59, and it's about environmental devastation left by the coal mining industry on a Native American land in Missouri. And she herself is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma. And it just, I saw it a couple days ago, and it just, it puts on stage a whole bunch of things that you just never see on stage. So, like, I personally don't know that I've ever seen a play that raises Native American issues. They're so rarely produced in New York City. And there is an active theater community, an active Native American theater community, and there is actually an organization in New York that is devoted to mentoring and fostering that community, but it's just rare to see it. And so, and also, you know, environmental devastation. We talked about this a little bit, but like, I think you rarely consider in the theater the impact that your electricity bill has on the cost, the genuine human cost of that. And so I thought that was very interesting. She's also a lawyer. Definitely don't read her bio because we'll feel immediately
like you've achieved nothing in
very
your life.
Insignificant. And like, you cannot plan your time very well, because somehow she managed to be a lawyer at a New York City law firm and part of the emerging writers group at The Public, and apparently, you know, develop this play all the way to a production. So
we could all the rest of us are really lazy.
Yeah, we can all take lessons. And then the last person I want to mention is Zoe Martinson. And she had a play at Fringe last year called Endabelle Funeral that I saw and was my favorite thing of the Fringe. And she did win one of the outstanding awards for the Fringe Festival last year. And she got accepted into the Lincoln Center Directors Program and has continued to develop that play. They just had a brief run in connection with the APAP Festival here in January. I think there's probably another run coming into New York, although I'm not certain. But she's also working on a play about the immigration system called Square Peg Round Hole. I think she's wonderful, and if you can see Endabelle Funeral, which is about, it takes place in a shack in Soweto, South Africa, and she's both wrote it and she's in it, and also her producing partner that's a part of her theater company called Smoke and Mirrors is also in it, and it involves, they do a lot of singing and gumboot dancing, and the story is devastating but really beautiful. And it just, she's a person who is just definitely someone to watch. I actually did an interview with her. If you went on Maximu and looked for Zoe's name, you could see a brief video interview with her about the Endabelle Funeral production. And I just think she's someone to pay close attention to. And she has actually a web series online called Minority Report that is about like the experiences of actors of color, and they're very funny. So I highly recommend checking that out. There's so many interesting things that I feel like I have a very busy schedule coming up to see all these productions.
That's true.
Okay, great. now we talk about what are we seeing in the immediate future. Does anybody have anything they haven't already mentioned? Tonight I'm going to see a show called Lesbians with Ukuleles and Guitars, and I'm so excited.
Where is it?
Brooklyn. I can't be more specific. I have no idea.
I feel like after your series of way too many penises from the front row,
oh my God,
this is your reward.
We did not talk about intimacy.
Do we have to?
Maybe for another day.
Yeah. I'm still not.
What do I have upcoming? I am finally seeing St. Joan next week.
Okay, tell us briefly about that.
That's the Bedlam Theatre Company's production of St. Joan by George Bernard Shaw. And I believe it takes, it's a very small cast interpreting, four actors interpreting the work. And I know Bedlam has been doing both Hamlet and St. Joan in rep. They had seen these productions a while back and then have brought them back again. And I haven't actually seen them, so everybody's been telling me I have to see it.
Yeah, there's no shortage of hyperbole in the reviews for St. Joan. People say things like, the best Shaw. So, you know.
And I realize, you know, as somebody who, you know, didn't really study theater and has weird gaps in my education over theater, somehow George Bernard Shaw slipped through the cracks. And I saw Pygmalion, and I was like, wow, this is brilliant. Why have I not seen more by him? So I feel like kind of an idiot, but I'm going to go see it. And then I have Coriolanus, the NT Live, which I think I've talked about before.
Yeah. Well, actually, we've talked about Shaw before, too, but that's okay. Anything coming up, Mike, that you're particularly excited about?
I mean, jump into the life of a playwright here, but I I sort of alternate between seeing a lot of plays and, like, and doing money jobs and, like, and creating work. And so I just saw a play called The Clearing by Jake Jepson. He's currently in Minneapolis, I think, on a Jerome Fellowship, but he's a recent Yale grad, and it was a really beautiful play. And that's all that I'm going to see until this Philippines benefit for Mai, because we've got like maybe 12 short plays and juggling like four directors and cramming them all into rehearsal space and matrixing that. and I just come off of like a 2-week stint writing for Bon Appetit, which is just like as a money job. So it's this crazy sort of imbalanced thing where it's like 2 weeks working and then like a week of seeing all the plays that I missed. And and so for now, producing for this Philippines benefit on the 17th.
Cool. And make sure that you email me all that information about the benefit and we'll put it on the website.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. All right. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, this is really fun.
This is a ton of fun. And you can come back anytime. We would love to have you. Awesome. All right. That's a wrap.
Yay.
Yay. I'd like to say yay at the end. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Max Moo Podcast. All of the shows and playwrights discussed can be found on maximu.com. Just click on podcasts. We would love to hear from you about this topic. What playwrights are you excited about that we didn't mention? You can find all of us on Twitter. Maximu is at M-A-X-A-M-O-O. Nicole is at Mildly Bitter. That's M-I-L-D-L-Y-B-I-T-T-E-R. Mike is at MikeLew4. That's M-I-K-E-L-E-W and the number 4. And I'm at Lindsay Behrens. LindSayBarenz. See you next week.